Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Master Life's Illusion. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, David McCready. But before I do that, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking David a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of those questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted by you, our listeners, in through the website prior to the call. Now, the initial inspiration for this call actually came from a very good friend of mine, David Pearl, who you may have also heard on an earlier edition of People You Should Meet. And David Pearl actually said, look, there's a guy that I really think you should meet. He's a phenomenal guy, and just his insights into this reality on planet Earth will absolutely blow your mind. And I guess that kind of introduction certainly got me very, very curious, and I immediately dropped David an email, and we've had a few phone conversations since then. It's been very, very interesting to get to know him, and it's an absolute pleasure to actually share you with him this evening. Okay, now David McCready is a transformational intuitive coach whose book, The Great Simulator, has become an underground hit. Now, David's interest in technology led him to a desire to understand advanced, non-terrestrial alien technologies, and this driving ambition led him to experience out-of-body realities where he interacted with beings from other dimensions, who led him on a program over the course of many years to train his mind and higher intuitive faculties. Now, today, David's job is to connect human beings to these intuitive faculties and also their higher spiritual faculties as well. So with that, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call David McCready.
Good evening, Damien. It's good to be with you.
Welcome. Now, David, the actual promo for this call is slightly different to the normal promos that I normally do because it actually included an illustration from your book, The Great Simulator, with planet Earth in picture with a massive arrow suggesting that us here on planet Earth aren't actually here. And I was just wondering if you could just kick us off by sharing, if we're not actually on planet Earth, where exactly are we?
Okay. Well, let me describe that, how that picture came about. Every day I work with people, helping them deal with their practical earthly challenges, whether that's in their jobs or in a relationship, or if this is about how they just make money and get by in life. And I do this by connecting with their guiding spirits and their higher energies. When I say this, it's rather like having a three-way conversation. Someone comes into the room, and literally with them come a lot of helpful spirit characters. You might relate to this as, say, some deceased relatives. They'd have like a mother or an uncle, something like that, who are just helping out. And I get given direction as to how to help them, and people find this really works. Now, when working with these out-of-body assistants, I got to see things from their viewpoint, and from where they're standing, it really looks like we're not here at all. They're of a view that we, like them, are these spirit beings, except we've climbed into a kind of artificial reality suit, which convinces us we're living human beings, whereas they see us as energetic auras, and they really reckon we're not here at all. So when I was putting the book together, I was putting it together from the perspective of what our heavenly friends would see.
Right. Now, you mentioned in our discussions during the week that self began becoming really fascinated by this whole process, by your first out-of-body experience. And I was just wondering if you could actually share a little bit about that experience and how it's actually changed your life personally.
Well, to begin with, I discovered about these out-of-body experiences and realized that it was probably possible. tried it myself on my own, and I could get limited results, and sometimes quite scary ones. Can you imagine, say, lying on your bed, letting your body fall asleep but keeping your mind awake until you become paralyzed? By God, you get a shock there. Move or control your breathing, and your heart races like mad, and you nearly kill yourself from a heart attack. But you realize you're starting to get somewhere, and then with a bit more practice, you can start to float around a bit and end up in these dark, weird spaces and get completely spun around. So at that stage, I reckoned I needed a bit of help on the subject, and I found a hypnotherapist who said he never taught astral projection, but he knew enough about it, he's willing to give it a go. And he helped me learn how to do it a bit more stably so that I get out of this sort of dark, earthly underworld and begun bumping into first guiding spirit. I knew they were out there somewhere. Did bump into one. I thought he'd immediately have the secrets of the universe to explain to me, and I discovered, no, it was a bit more basic. I had to be taught how to understand yes and no in telepathic language, and we go from there. So
great.
That gives you a bit of an insight what it was like to start off.
Great. And how has it actually changed your life, David? Just having a connection with the out-of-body world.
How did it what?
How has it changed your life?
Well, it gave me a whole new career. Before I'd got the knack of doing this, I spent my days as a structural engineer and building maintenance contractor, doing lots of practical things, mending buildings, mending pieces of equipment in buildings. And now what I do is do servicing and maintenance on human beings.
Great. Now, I mentioned in the intro, you are the author of the book, The Great Simulator. And I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about what this book is designed to give people.
Well, the beginning of your show with the intro there, you were talking about a lot of out-of-this-world things that I'd been studying. The idea is not that David McCready walks around alone saying, I've seen the light of this or I've seen that, tells everyone about it, but they have no access. The plan is to give people this sort of access. For example, a lot of people would love to be able to chat with guiding spirits and deceased relatives or loved ones, and giving very good instructions that help you do that. So it's really a manual, a tool that allows you to understand what's going on with you and how you break out of a lot of the illusions.
Great. And what kind of feedback has the book received from people who've read it?
Well, a few people thought I was completely mad, but a lot of other people who got into this suddenly discovered it was very much on the ball, and it had simplified and given a proper explanation of a lot of ancient and sometimes lost spiritual awareness. It had got rid of all the nonsense and reduced it to very practical observations and directions that anyone can follow. But the idea is to give anybody these abilities so that they can check all these things out for themselves. If someone says life is an illusion, you should be able to check it out for yourself and not rely on hearsay from other people. So in terms of the reaction to the book, I self-published it because I thought if I took it to a regular publisher, they'd be slow or it'd be uphill. And I thought I'd just publish it myself and get on with it. And got it into, for example, in London at the foremost esoteric bookshop called Watkins. If you've ever gone
there. Yeah, I'm
to
aware of Watkins.
Leicester Square. Yeah, it's in there. That book has sat on their top 20 bestsellers lists for 18 months now.
Wow.
And the manager said he's never had someone come with a self-published book and it just stay up there and sell because this has been giving so many people the information that they were searching for. So that's the reaction it gets. It does sell. People want to know what's in it.
Wow, that's amazing. And Now, the actual book writing process, was it a very fluid, quick and easy process, or did it take a little bit more time than that?
It really took two goes to do it. I first got stuck into it probably in about 2003, wrote it out, lots of information, but not terribly well structured. I gave it to an editor to structure it, and a few weeks later the editor said, I can't do this, my brain locks up. It looks relatively reasonable when you first read it, but I just can't set it upright. So she quit, gave it to another editor, who, after about a week of working on this, came back to me and said, I can't edit this at all, and I'm giving up editing forever. So we then moved on to our third editor, who was made of stronger stuff and was able to highlight the Word document it was written on with lots of yellow marks, chucked it back to me and said, you fix it, here's what's wrong with it. And I gave up for a few years. So in 2007, I had another go, and this time, having learned a bit more about how you present documents and got some more information in that was going to go in the book, made a better job of the whole thing. And when we gave it to the editors this time, they were able to work on it quite well. And it was two editors, both English teachers, one of them who actually taught me English at school many years ago. Though a couple of weeks after he'd finished editing it, he dropped dead. But anyway, he spoke to me from the heavens on this subject and is assuring that his life's purpose had more than editing my book in 2007.
Great. So is there another book inside of you waiting to come out, or is the Great Simulator the all-encompassing manual for people?
It's as much manual as you can get into 300 pages. What we're doing at the moment is putting together the next part of the whole thing, though there's still some research and development going on, and I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. Many people who are alive on Earth today, and such as you can be alive on Earth, have lived in other dimensions on other planets. And with various clients and people who've come in to see me, we've been having a look at some of the other worlds they've been living on by way of doing some research and development for the book. And we've found many, many different types of life forms you can actually have. The thing that you notice is straight away that there are a lot of other worlds where you can be alive, and they tend to be initially of rather sort of Darwinian makeup. So we have here the DNA that's produced life on Earth. You'll find other worlds where Darwinian evolution has taken other turns. For example, where some types of fish would be the highest life form on that planet, or, for example, some sorts of insects would be the highest life form. When you bump into them, they are a very developed lot. They develop their own science and technologies and certainly able to see what we're up to here on Earth. And naturally enough, you also bump into very technologically advanced alien life forms that are somewhat more humanoid. So we wanted to book into the third part of the book a lot of this information to give people insights as to what it's like out there. There's speculation about, so we tried to actually give some good examples of if anyone wanted to see what other lives they'd lived beyond human lives, here are some typical types you might bump into. So that's the kind of research we've been doing here.
And have you personally connected with some other lives that have blown you away from your personal experience?
When I've looked into other lives that I've had, I've personally found to date I've been stopped from looking at some of the more alien aspects. I don't know why yet. I've been allowed to do that with people who've come to me. I've been able to look what they're up to, but I've often been gently blocked from looking at too much stuff that wasn't based on planet Earth about me. Must be spacey enough as it is. But when looking on planet Earth into other lifetimes, I've certainly bumped looked into a lot of stuff in North American Indian lives, also looking into future life on Earth, where, for example, you wouldn't have normal electrical cables running through the ground in a way that I believe Tesla predicted you'd be able to send electricity through the air, and people would walk around with their own little power packs instead of having batteries for what would pass for the advanced mobile phones that they'd have then.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a great world out there, and what we're trying to do is give everyone access to it. We're saying, here's how you start to break into it. Here are techniques to do it. And that's what the book's all about, that anyone who follows us can do this. And just on a mundane level, if you've got problems in a few things in life, your guiding spirits are there to help. And what they try to do is make you more aware of what you're creating in your life. They don't really like to tell you the answers to everything, because it's a bit like giving a school kid the answers to some kind of exam or practical problem they're working out. What they try and do is guide you towards seeing what you are personally doing in a practical way, say with your job. If you've got a very difficult boss and you're trying to get on in that company, your guiding spirits would be there to help you understand the mind of your boss and how to interact better with that person. Most of what we do here is really practical stuff.
Great. I'm curious to find out what people have been coming to you, David, for coaching and consulting. What sort of occupations do they have? What countries are they based in? What are they interested in? And what exactly are they seeking when they come to see you?
When we talk about more coaching activities, somehow I just about fit it into that category. And for years I worked with people in business to help them with management issues, how to get more out of their teams. And I'd teach managers how to be a bit telepathic and read the minds of their workers, which is always very useful if you want to know whether or not someone's lying or telling you the whole truth. I taught them those sorts of skills, but after a while I felt I could really do better and I could take these people further. So what happened next was I ended up teaching people who wanted to learn more outright mediumistic skills, who wanted to be more psychic and clairvoyant. And these people would come from all walks of life, but mostly have a hard time sticking it on business expenses, so one or two of them have cracked that one and can do it. So
the expenses scandal wouldn't happen to be any politicians by any chance.
Well, in that context, I do have a client at the moment who does help coach MPs, and this particular client's challenge is to get them to be more ethical and return to some decent values, because they've got so locked up in their own particular clique. So when you talk about MPs' expenses, what we do with people here is actually make them behave better rather than help them pay off a mortgage they don't have or drain their moat, whatever it happens to be.
Great. Now, David, I mentioned earlier on in the call that we had a whole series of different questions that have come in from people from all around the world, and I thought I might actually ask you a few of them now. So I'm going to actually start with a question from Amrita in the UK. And Amrita asks, when you are the most evolved that you can be as a human being, what next? Or is this different for everyone?
This is absolutely different for everyone. And when you're talking about as evolved as you can be, things sometimes seem to run in reverse. What I've often found is people who've had a lot of previous experiences on Earth, living as, say, very evolved spiritual teachers in remote monastery-type places in the Tibet and China. And now what they've done is they've come here to live the life as a hard-pressed mum or something like that. And it's like the next challenge is, can they live in a very materialistic environment and still connect to their inner spiritual abilities, so that when we think about evolving as a spiritual entity going up and becoming more and more saintly and perhaps levitating down the road, mm-hmm. you very often find it's completely the opposite. People have had a lot of these saintly experiences to begin with, and now what they're doing is throwing themselves into the most materialistic situations and seeing if they can still demonstrate that love and light. So there doesn't seem to be a linear progression forward.
Mm. So if you are a highly evolved soul in this lifetime, you could certainly come back and experience a totally different reality.
You find yourself as an accountant or something.
That explains everything for me. my unconscious question. Great. Now I have a question here from Patrick in the United States. And Patrick asks, how do we get past what we have long accepted as reality? And Dave, you sort of mentioned that it was almost like pulling on this human suit. And how do we actually get past that?
A couple of ways. The first way is you pay attention to your curiosity. For example, we're living in a universe that astrophysicists reckon is 95% dark matter, as in matter we can't see or normally detect with physical instrumentation. And for example, there are people down mine shafts spending 20 years of their life trying to find dark matter. Good luck to them, really. They're supposed to make up about 95% of the universe and is undetectable by normal means, but without it, our universe apparently doesn't function, according to these astrophysicists. So the question really is, where is this dark matter? In fact, where is any matter? If you have a big particle accelerator and go looking for particles of matter, the closer you look, the harder and harder they are to find, till ultimately you start saying there's nothing there at all. So remember this, everything that's very solid around you, pinch yourself, grab your leg or grab an arm, and remember that this is all made up out of a vacuum, somehow created out of energy, but it now appears very solid. So the first step in getting past this physical reality is just to notice that scientists spending billions of dollars haven't been able to find what you're actually made of. The next thing you can do to get past what we call our physical reality is just to do self-awareness exercises and start to notice the aura around you. I'll just give you a quick example of what I mean by aura. If you're ever sitting on a train or something like that, you might have sometimes felt someone's reading your newspaper or your book. You'll have felt their presence. And we can often feel the presence of many things around us. And what is that made up of? If you pay more and more attention to these presences, perhaps even ghostly presences, you begin to realize that there's most definitely another reality going on, and we should pay attention to it. So hopefully that answers that question of how do we get past this current reality.
Mm. I know with animals, they seem to have a very highly developed sense of what's beyond. And I just remember hearing with the tsunami that there were lots of animals that actually fled, knowing exactly what was coming. And other examples of dogs knowing minutes before their owners coming home, they're literally waiting at the door in anticipation of them arriving. So is that the kind of faculty we're trying to turn on as human beings as well?
Yeah, well, we have that ability, but what's happened is we've managed to switch it off. And here's the joke. People go for years trying to pull that ability into themselves, but what in fact they have to do to get access to it is just stop blocking it. And I want to repeat that again. If you want these higher faculties, you have to do no more than stop blocking them. And I give you just a quick example about something simple we do that blocks our ability to be self-aware. The average person does not breathe properly. You all know that you can take a deeper breath, getting the air into your stomach using your lower diaphragm muscle. If you were an opera singer, you'd have to do this on a daily basis to earn your living. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to project your voice. But the average one of us doesn't even breathe down into our bodies. We do it all from our chests because we're actually blocking up our breathing system as an initial example of how we clog ourselves up and then walk around with a hunched appearance as if we're practicing for one of those road signs warning you about old people with walking sticks crossing the street. So in simple ways, you just have to learn how to block yourself less and let your whole body's energy system flow.
Right. And is there any other techniques once you've got the breathing mastered?
Yes, when you're breathing better, you can start to feel your energetic presence in your body. And as you start to feel your body energies, and just keep practicing with that, you'll start to feel the energies of other things and the people around you. It's merely a case of noticing. It's a bit like when you walk down a noisy street, your brain has learned how to filter out the sound of the traffic. But if you were talking to someone on the phone and they were going down a noisy street, you'd hear all the traffic coming over the phone. It would be really, really loud. But if you were on that street, you'd filter it out. You just have to retrain your brain to stop filtering out all these extra senses. And then it's not very difficult. It's just a matter of doing simple, practical exercises.
Great. Excellent. Now, this is actually a very, very practical question from Rashmi in the UK. And yeah. I guess it's just to do with the current economic state of the world. And Rashmi asks, at this time, a lot of us are facing what appears to be insurmountable financial issues. What can we change or practice to overcome these limitations to encourage the money energy to continue to flow?
Right. He's accidentally opened up a really big area here. I'm going to explain on a tangent a bit of what a lot of people have noticed and then come back to his question exactly. So if he's listening, it can take us just about 2 minutes to get round to what's going on right now with this current change. There's an evolution happening right now whereby all human beings are switching on to having a much higher spiritual awareness and consciousness. It is often referred to as being a big shift that occurs round about 2012. But what's happening on the ground is that individuals are learning how to change themselves. In many ways, they're being forced to change themselves. I'll give you an example about how this works. In life, everything works in balance. So if you are connecting to a lot of very positive energy, you need to connect to a lot of negative energy to balance it. So say, for example, if we don't have practical challenges in life driving us forward, we tend to sit on the sofa and do very little. We become couch potatoes. But if we have really good practical stimulation and demanding situations, such as Rashmi was saying, almost insurmountable financial challenges, that then is driving us forward. We're picking up the negative energy, which is there to balance that positive, creative side we've got available to us. Now, many people do jobs that they're not really happy with, but it's all they know, and they end up thinking in very limited terms. But when they've got a sufficiently insurmountable challenge, like this financial issue he quotes, people then have to start going outside their normal box, outside their comfort zone. And as part of going outside their comfort zone, they always become more self-aware. It's inevitable. So when he's talking about these challenges that he and others would face, it's forcing him to do new things. It's perhaps forcing him to discover that he's got new talents and new abilities that he could actually be using, but he's been afraid to take the chance so far. He hadn't been pushed into a sufficient corner to give it a go and discover these latent talents and bring them out to the fore in perhaps some new career line or working differently in his existing job. So I hope, Rashmi, that's giving you some sort of insight into how do we overcome these challenges. Realize they're there to give you a move on. They're there to say, come on, do it now. No sitting around, no drifting around for a lifetime. Get on with it. Inside yourself, you do know there are things you could do better. You've just got to give yourself permission to give it a try. You might be crap at it at first and fail on your first few attempts, but go for it. Don't give up. Go for it, man.
Great. With challenges that are actually appearing on a global level, is that a collective kick in the pants for us all to wake up and actually celebrate and recognize more of our human potential?
Well, I think in your question, you've more or less described what's happening. It's very hard to say more at that point. Yes, there we go. You know, if we don't have to be kicking the pants, we will be couch potatoes.
So it's all a good thing. Great. Now, this next question comes from Tara in the UK, and it's around the whole area of out-of-body experiences. And Tara asks, is it possible to have a self-induced out-of-body experience? If so, how?
Short answer, read the book. Editors have given up their careers. One has even died for this. Read the book. And it's gone. Back to where you do. A lot of people have accidental out-of-body experiences, and I email some phone calls from them saying, what's going on, how do I deal with it, etc., etc. And what we do is we learn how to control this. It might sound ridiculous, I'm banging on about breathing, but if you don't start there and start to feel your body's energy system, you haven't a clue. It's going to be very random. When you start to control your breathing, you start to learn how your body energy flow is functioning. And as you learn how to work with that energy flow, it allows you to have controlled out-of-body experiences, because without that, you just tend to sort of crash around like a blind person in a china shop, not particularly going anywhere. And yet when you start to get some control over yourself, you start to experience some of your higher consciousness. You can go wonderful places. You'll have a team of guiding spirits who'll take you on guided tours. It's a great world. So is it possible to do this on your own? Yes, in fact, it's a lot easier than you realize once you get going on this. It's just practice. Very hard to explain in an interview to people who haven't done it the finer points of what's going on. But just to give you a few more insights, perhaps you could understand. So when you're in a conversation with someone, you often don't really mean what you're saying. You might be saying one thing to someone, but your mind is elsewhere. Now, when you're doing an out-of-body activity, your deeper emotions and desires are the ones that are driving you. But as in normal life, your mind and what you're really feeling are out of sync, so in out-of-body experiences, everything tends to be a bit out of sync as well, until you've resolved this and got a much more centered approach. And by having that centered feeling, so in life, you'd say what you really felt and thought, and you wouldn't be lying or twisting the truth to people, which you do on a daily basis. It's as ridiculous how prevalent this is. If you can get over that sort of thing, it's much easier to go out of body, because your whole body or your consciousness is working as one, not as a confused entity.
All right. So. Excellent. Cool. So this next question comes in from Bruce in Australia. And hello to everyone out in Australia. It's good to have you on the line. I know it's probably very early in the morning over there. Now, Bruce asks, how do you know for sure that we decided to experience life as a human being?
The only way you'll know for sure is by getting out of your body, discovering where you really are, and then you'll know. That is the answer. This is to know for sure, you've got to do it personally. There is no other answer to this one. The anecdotal evidence, though, is certainly around us. And I give you one example that really stuck out in my mind. For many years, I'd noticed in the spirit world there was a little boy who'd show up calling me dad and saying, I'm going to be your son. Now, I mean, it's really like seeing a spirit friend who's borrowing my DNA and some of his mother's to be, and this was long before I ever met his mother to be here on Earth. And after a while, I actually noticed he was starting to show up with a younger sister. So if not, it's a boy and a girl come to my life. And they hung around for years. Clients who came to my office when they were practicing their mediumship said hello to him and his sister as well. So lots of us got to know him. It wasn't as if it was just some phantom who'd only show up for me and hide when anyone else came into the room. We got to know him. Eventually, one day, we managed to get hold of his mother. And then we were on track for getting him born. And little fella got born, and incidentally, a year and a half later, his sister managed to make it through. So there they were. But one morning, I was walking to work before his sister had arrived, and I was thinking how myself and his mother were really crap parents. We just hadn't been doing good enough with parents, arguing with each other as husband and wife do, and not great when you've got children doing that. And I'm thinking, what a wonderful little guy he was. And, poor guy, he'd got into this world and he'd got these stupid parents who behaved so badly. And then I realized that actually he'd known what his parents were like, so he should jolly well put up with it.
Now, with the, we'll go a bit deeper into this whole parental selection process. The newborn spirits, do they actually choose the mother first, or do they choose the father first, or does it have to see the two together in their minds before they can actually commit to coming to this earth plane?
Well, what we tend to find is that we all know each other before we're born, and it's like having a little chat about who's going to do what, who's going to be the mom, who's going to be the dad, who's going to be the son, and in subsequent lifetimes you can change it round a bit. And you say, okay, well, you were my mum last time, well, I'll be a mum this time. And we get to swap it around. So we have lots of combinations, and it's a very dynamic process. That answers your question there about how we do this.
Great. Cool. Okay, this next question comes from Austria, and it comes from Emilio. And Emilio asks, are we supposed to know that we live in an illusion or a simulator or a matrix or whatever we choose to call it? I mean, if we can see it as an illusion, can we really make the experiences we wanted to make here? And if knowing this, that we live in an illusion, is so important, then why do few individuals ever get to glimpse this important truth?
Okay. Let's work backwards a bit. Many people are going to discover in its illusion, and this is part of the amazing evolution that's happening to all the spirit beings that are showing up here at the moment. All of us are being human beings. We are going through an evolution. All of you are going to get more psychic, clairvoyant, telepathic. It is happening. You're going to get curious. There are going to be people who can teach you how to do it. You'll get good books on the subject. It's going on. But to answer the early part of the question, which is much more about how do we control this illusion and turn it into what we want, well, that demonstrates one of the common mistakes that I went through for years and I help other people to snap out of, and that is you're in the illusion you want right now. You're actually experiencing. If you want to know what you really wanted, just notice what kind of life you're in at this minute. That is what you've chosen. Now, it might seem ridiculous, you know, it might be a starving African baby somewhere, but there it is. And if you really want to fundamentally change that life, you can't easily tinker with it until you've discovered why you wanted it the way it is. And this is something I'll repeat again. Perhaps another way, so that people get this idea. If you want to change your life, you have to understand what are the forces you've put in place to make your life the way it is today. So, for example, if you've got a crap boyfriend or girlfriend or crap husband or wife, crap boss, whatever it is, you've got to discover why it is you attracted that situation if you want to stop repeating it. You've got to discover why you put yourself into that, because there will be very valid and very proactive reasons that will demand that you develop and somehow evolve. So if you're going to go changing your life, you've got to learn what's going on. On the subject of questions, which fits into this, before the interview you sent me a few things that people wanted to know, and there's a gentleman called Pavel in the UK who asked, I have been stolen from many times in the UK. And he says, I don't steal, and I'm not a victim, so I'm wondering why this keeps happening to me. Any idea?
That's a great question, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example of that. We often walk down the street not really using our natural clairvoyance and sense of danger. Like you speaking about animals could see a tsunami coming. Well, if we look at some of the more robber-type characters in society, they have particular auras with which a bit of practice you can start to see their aura. So if you're walking down the street, instead of daydreaming about some conversation you had with someone earlier, or daydreaming about a conversation you think you might have with someone tomorrow, and just started noticing the auras and energies of people around you, you'd start to spot the robbers a bit more, and it would very much improve your psychic skills just by practicing that on a daily basis. So there's one simple example. You know, it's teaching you more self-awareness. So I hope, Pavel, when you're walking down the street, you remember to pay attention to where you are a bit more, because if you see something coming, robbers get put off when you look prepared. They like to take people by surprise.
Great. That's an excellent answer. Now, there's a question here from Stuart in the UK, and Stuart asks, how can I focus on my spiritual awakening when my practical life around me is in turmoil and seems to be falling apart?
So, just to get it right, so your basic question is, I'm too busy to do anything it right now, and I've got too much baggage for the past. So answer that one. Well, we have plenty of lifetimes to do this, and if you feel you've not got enough spare time in this lifetime to get on with developing that extra self-awareness, that's fine. You can have another go, and you can have plenty more goes. But at some point, you're going to get fed up with going around the same hamster wheel or rat run of nonsense and crap, and you'll say, there must be a better way, and I'm going to devote some time to finding it, whatever this takes, whether it's even just practical things about having a more positive attitude towards yourself or just demanding better from life, whatever it is, when you're ready, you can start going for it. It doesn't matter how busy you are, you'll make the time.
Great. And when people do actually come back into new lifetimes, is it actually true that they repeat the same lessons if they haven't actually integrated those lessons in this incarnation?
Well, we do seem to require a lot of goes to get things right, so to speak. It's rather like a child learning to walk. It takes a child a year of trial and error to learn how to walk, and it takes us a lot of time how to get to grips with these, not lessons so much, but challenges we give ourselves. And what we tend to do is have these challenges at more advanced levels. As I spoke of earlier about people who say had very spiritual lifetimes in quiet surroundings and then tried in something more complex. For example, people often ask, what happened to all the very spiritually connected North American Indians who'd have these very aware lives, but they've all gone? Where are they? Well, the answer is they're showing up in our cities, sometimes going into shops to buy dream catchers and North American memorabilia because they feel very close to it. But basically, they're now trying to see if they can demonstrate that spiritual awareness in a very materialistic environment, like they're going for the next degree of difficulty up. So we go through these things, we don't go backwards, we try to have more difficult challenges and rise above them.
Right. So in terms of the evolution of the planet, do you actually anticipate these challenges becoming more and more intense? I know lots of people in the world are feeling very, very challenged already, but I guess in future generations to come, do you envisage a world much more challenging than the one we're currently living in?
Yes, but at the same time, people will be better equipped to deal with it. So it all keeps itself in a natural harmony.
Right.
And most of us are going to be back here again in sort of future lifetimes experiencing this. And I've seen a lot of stuff in the future, so there doesn't seem any danger of the planet dissolving in the next few years. I've seen a lot in the future. We somehow manage not to blow the place up and still keep living. So we can look forward to that at least.
Specifically with the 2012... like it's been bandied around by so many different people. Are there some real key lessons that we need to collectively integrate to move through that foretold period of transition?
When you use the word need, some people might understand that in the context as you have to do it. It's like forced upon you. I think the better way of saying need would be we're going to be given the stimulation, rather such as earlier Rashmi was talking about increasing financial challenges. Well, we're being given that stimulation to go and develop, and the question is, how long do we want to delay our development? How long do you want to drag your feet? You don't have to do it, but there's certainly lots of practical needs, and if you could meet them, just for example, by learning how to breathe better so that when you are doing things such as walking down the street, you can burn off all the extra calories from this ridiculous diet we have. I'll just mention that one again. A lot of people find themselves too fat, they're trying to slim down, it's hard work, but actually you lose fat, you remove calories from your body through the act of breathing better. When people take more exercise, they breathe better. They remove the carbon from their body in the form of carbon dioxide coming out of their breath, which is a handy thing. Plants soak it all up and turn themselves back into food for us, so there's a wonderful cycle. But there we are. There's an example of these simple things we can do better that enable us to live in this ever more challenging environment. We get more ridiculous but delicious food, so we've got to learn how to breathe better to cope with it and get all that food out of our bodies again.
Great, there is hope for our modern diet. That's good to hear. Well, David, we're actually coming up to the end of the hour, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thanks very much for coming on the show. Like I've personally had some really illuminating things that have, I guess, light bulbs that have flashed up in my mind, and it's just really amazing to see the world through your eyes over the past hour. And I have no doubt that people on the call as well have really been fascinated by the things that you've had to share and your very unique way of seeing the world. And I was just wondering for people on the call who have resonated deeply with your message, how would they actually find out more about the work you do and stay in contact with you?
Okay, well, I try to make it as easy as possible for people to find me. If you're looking on the internet, just look up greatsimulator.com. That's greatsimulator.com, where anyone who logs on can get a free download of the first part of the book. There is for nothing. Have a look at it. You'll see some more of what we're talking about. And my contact details are there. So I've done what I can to be an easy person to find. And people who've gone through the website have traveled sometimes great distances here to come and see me because they wanted to do some practical exercise. They've read about them, they've done some themselves, and they wanted to have a bit of one-to-one tuition as well. And gone away with some amazing results. They were surprised how quickly they could develop their natural clairvoyance. Because same thing, I find people read the instructions, but my habit of not following through and doing it, they write it down what to do, they don't seem to do it a lot of the time. They sit with me, and once we're sitting there, they've no option but to get on with it, and we get results quite rapidly.
Right.
So there I am, greatstimulator.com, very easy to get hold of me. And I look forward to getting some emails tomorrow morning.
Fantastic. And with your one-on-one sessions, how long do they typically last for? Are they long sessions, or can you actually help people get a connection pretty swiftly?
When I book it in, I book it in for an hour. But to the great annoyance of my wife, she often finds I work with people for more than an hour, and sometimes with clients they've been there 2.5 hours because we've been having fun together. And she phones up and says, listen, I want to talk to you about something. Why are you still working like that? So the other thing is the work we do is amazing. We get to see so many different aspects of this world from different angles. It's really compelling stuff when you get into it. Because it's so eye-opening, you just don't want to stop. It's like picking up a great book that just shows you more and more. You want to discover more and more until you've worn yourself out and then have to do something mundane like have lunch or go to the loo.
Yeah. And for I was just checking for our international guests who may want to work with you. Like, is it also possible to work with you over the phone as well, as in person?
We can do that. I do help people over the phone, but if we can get physically together, it's much better to do that. We'll just get better results. So we can do both, and there it is. What more can I say? You know, over the phone is good, but one-to-one is about 3 to 4 times better.
Okay, great. Now, the question I'm really keen to ask, David, is the future of David McCready. Have you got a very clear picture of what's unfolding? And if so, can you give all of us here a little bit of an insight as to what's going to unfold in your life?
That is a desperately tricky one, I find. Not shown too much. Having, like everyone else, having to act through a human ego like everyone else. My human ego thinks I should be amazingly rich and often do very little work at all and goodness knows what. And clearly the plan for David McCready was to get him to do a lot of work and sometimes to do things that he wouldn't want to have done when it might be first proposed to him. So David McCready lives on a need-to-know basis a lot of the time. What I might say is, in this form, I will be doing more traveling around the world in the future, and I think that's probably in response to people not wanting to travel over to the UK and having enough interested people in other parts of the world who want to do workshops, and I'll be going there to help them. So that seems to beckon in the future. A lot of psychic people see me doing a lot of traveling and saying, I'd better enjoy my, shall we say, non-airport life right now, because I'm going to look back to it as being happy days. And wrong luggage allowance and goodness knows what. So that's some of what lies ahead.
Great. And just finally, for people at home trying to master life's illusion, just wondering if you had any closing insights or wisdom to wrap everything up as well.
Okay, I've got a major one, and that is getting to be more self-aware is much easier than you believe. Our conditioning in life, our experience, is based on what we knew how to do yesterday. There is this evolution happening right now that makes it much easier for you to take on these skills. And if you just focus on the very simple things like your basic energy awareness, how you're breathing nicely, breathing with a smile, you will suddenly find you're a lot more self-aware than you recognized. It's surprisingly easy. So that's a message for everyone. It's easy. The help's out there. Work with it. You've got a whole team of guiding spirits standing beside you, waiting to give you more practical tips. Learn how to communicate with them.
Great. And if you get it wrong, you can come back and do it all again.
What's that?
And if you get it wrong, you can come back and do it all again.
Yeah, well, you can't really get it wrong. You get as many attempts as you need.
Great. Well, David, thank you so much for sharing your incredible wealth of knowledge and also life experience and insight. It's been absolutely illuminating for me, and I have no doubt it's been illuminating for people listening to this call live, and also for people who have had the opportunity to listen back to it via the recording page. Now, for those of you who are on the call this evening and would like to listen to this again, it will be made available tomorrow first thing on the recordings page. And if the recording is freely available, so if you have a friend who you know that would be absolutely thrilled to learn this knowledge and it will really help them on their life's journey, by all means do share the recording with them and take that proactive step of actually changing someone else's life. Great. So thanks everyone at home, and thank you once again, David. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Okay. Thank you again, Damon. I hope everyone who gets hold of a copy of the book enjoys it, because it's been doing really well and outselling what anyone who'd normally self-publish would do, because it's rather as if out there the people have actually wanted to give a message to themselves, and they needed some advanced information that would set them on a new path. It's like, this book is a message to yourself. You have actually put your own insights into it at a higher level. So there it is. You've got it on paper now. Thanks for having me there, Damon.
My pleasure, David. And thank you, everyone at home. Good night.